truth. Survivor. I am your host, Johnny Delirious, laboratory naturopathic doctor. Question: would you like to know about a cancer cure that costs less than your paycheck? It's a cure that works. Now, you know Johnny shoots straight. He always gives you the straight scoop. This cancer cure works, and it's a product that is readily available and easy to use. You need to hear the full show to get the background, and at the end of the show, I will reveal how you can obtain all the information you need to get this cancer cure. Call your friends and tell them right now to listen to RBN. This is a very important show in so many ways. Ladies and gentlemen, you're well aware that by now there's a global effort to control our food, our water, and our air. You've heard the conspiracy theories from population control with mass sterilization to promoting cancer-causing additives in our food supply. We know there's a grain of truth to all these suppositions and theories going around, but you do not have to be afraid. Here at the Master Survivor, I always bring you the facts, not theory. Today is no different. We have a fighting chance against these global forces, even with all their money. Don't ever forget that we, the people, have the power. There are more of us than there are of them. We don't ever have to give up, because today's show will open your eyes. We're making real progress to protect our rights. I have a very important guest, and it's a very special show, and some messages about, you know, how we're fighting to preserve, in some cases, restore food freedoms. His name is Scott Tipps. But before I bring Scott on, let me give you a little background. Scott obtained his Juris Doctorate degree from the University of California, Berkeley, and then quickly passed the California bar exam. As a California licensed attorney, he has specialized in food and drug law and trademark law, but also engages in business litigation, general business law, nonprofit organizations with an international clientele. Since 1989, Scott has been the general counsel for the National Health Federation, the world's oldest health freedom organization for consumers, as well as the editor-in-chief of its magazine, Health Freedom News. In 2007, he became the National Health Federation president and has been a frequent speaker for the organization and for health freedom worldwide on many continents. Scott continues to write a monthly column for Whole Foods magazine called Legal Tips, a column he started several decades ago. Currently, he's primarily occupied with health freedom issues arising from national governments and such international organizations as the Codex Amarantares Commission's attempt to limit our individual freedom of choice in health matters. In that capacity, Scott has compiled and edited and published a book on the subject entitled Codex Amarantares, Global Food Imperialism. He also actively participates in Codex meetings worldwide and has attended more Codex meetings than any other health freedom activist combined. We all get busy with our lives. and don't realize that behind the scenes, this shining knight, Scott Tipps, has been single-handedly been working so hard to protect our health freedoms. I am guilty of it myself. I get myopic and with a narrow vision because I am in the microcosm. I'm in the microcosm, helping my patients one-on-one to overcome disease. However, while in that noble effort, I lose track or I'm not aware of the macrocosm of policies that are being made and taking place that may directly affect the quality of our health and our food supplies or limit the access to life-saving therapies. These policies, when implemented, directly affect my life and the lives of my patients. It could be a harmless herbal remedy that has been banned. This directly affects my patients' lives and my ability to help them recover if they need that particular remedy. With tyrannical policies being made, my patients soon may not have access to a plan or a supplement in the amounts needed to improve their health. Thank God we have Scott fighting for our rights. The following are just some of the victories that they have done. Scott has done with National Health Federation. In Dusseldorf meeting of the Codex in November 2009, when Scott was made, he was able to stop the dumbed-down, ridiculously low nutrition reference values for vitamins and minerals from passing through to adoption. And this victory is so important because now we're able to have enough vitamins and minerals to buy. You know, they wanted to put prescriptions on vitamins, but this victory was so important because unexpectedly and virtually single-handedly, Scott and the National Health Federation stood up against everyone else in the room. That's over 250 delegates, and he got that adoption squashed. It didn't go through. There was another victory in 2012 when the National Health Federation and Scott stopped melamine from being allowed to contaminate infant formula in unlimited amounts from migration from packaging. In this case, you know, if in case you don't know, melamine is a chemical compound that has a number of industrial uses, including production of laminates, glues, dinnerware, adhesive moldings. It doesn't need to be in any form or any amount in infant formula. And Scott, in the beginning, you know, worked for 2.5 years to craft this petition that he was doing to the committee. And, you know, after 3 years, he was the only one to start it out. But after 3 years, all 250 delegates came and supported Scott. And then at that Rotterdam meeting in 2009, he had all the support from the delegates. And all the delegates, capped the permissible levels. So that was really a big one. I mean, you know, we don't need those kind of industrial toxins in the infant formulas. So those were stopped. And there's so many more. And I want to bring Scott on. And, you know, I'm honored to have Scott on the show with us today to discuss how our food and health freedoms have gained or lost ground over the decades. Like I said earlier, we will be talking about facts, not theory. I have to say that if it wasn't for Scott and National Health Federation, we would not have many of our rights left with our food and our water and our vitamin supplements. Scott is a big supporter of the Second Amendment and a believer in our God-given right for clean water and wholesome, unaltered food. The reason for this long and exhaustive introduction should be obvious. If there's one person leading one organization that's fighting worldwide for our rights to have safe, wholesome, nutrition foods in our bodies, it's Scott Tipps, National Health Federation. If there's one person and one organization that has made sure we always have vitamins and minerals without a prescription, he is Scott Tipps, National Health Federation. If there's one person leading one organization that stood up directly face-to-face against the policymakers of the global regulation of water, he is Scott Tipps, the National Health Federation. There is one person leading one organization who has continued to mobilize and guard our right to put out mandatory drugs, you know, like vaccines. We should, you know, not have to do or take a drug, and Scott Tipps has been in that fight to help us opt out if we choose to. Scott Tipps, thank you for all the hard work you've done over the decades to guard and fight for our water and our food rights, and welcome to the Master Survivor Show.
Well, thank you, Johnny, and I appreciate that really kind of interesting and thorough introduction. It really gets me blushing here, so thank you, though.
Oh, you deserve it, and I, for years I've been watching what you do. As you know, I've been a member of National Health Federation, and you know, there's one thing, this is what got me, the fact that you're going to Codex meetings worldwide, because I remember when I was running the lab back in the 80s, I read somewhere in one of my newsletters that I said that, you know, they were talking about prescriptions for vitamins, supplements, and it, you know, and then this Codex committee was, you know, I said, who are these people? Trying to put prescriptions on vitamins and supplements, and even as far back then. And then when I found out about National Health Federation and what you're doing, and I said, golly, this guy's going to Codex meetings and he's standing up for us. So why don't you just tell our listeners so they understand just a little bit more, because I really can't get my head around who Codex Amarantaras is and what they do and why.
Okay, I'd be more than happy to. For those of your listeners who don't already know, the Codex Alimentarius is an organization that was created back in the early 60s. It took about 3 years to bring it into 2-3 years to bring it into fruition, but it was created under the auspices of the Food and Agriculture Organization and the World Health Organization, so the WHO and the FAO. And it was really intended to eliminate international barriers to trade in food, to sort of harmonize rules and regulations governing the distribution of food. And indeed, the name Codex Alimentarius actually is Latin for food code. And this is really all it deals with. It doesn't deal with drugs. It doesn't deal with medical devices. It doesn't deal with herbal medicines, at least not directly.
Oh.
So just food and drink.
Well, that's important, too, because that's the biggest part of my practice. You know, I practice the old Greek ways and use laboratory science to, you know, really hone in. You know, the Greeks didn't have chemistry, but I put them both together. And yeah, food, you know, Hippocrates said, you know, food's our medicine, our medicine's our food.
Right.
So I'm just so happy that you're doing that. So tell us a little bit more. I didn't tell all your successes, but there's so much we can talk about Codex Amarantaris, and I want you to really expand on that.
There really is. I mean, it could take more than the time we have allotted for this program, but to cut to the chase, basically, I've been going to these meetings for about 20 years, and NHF had been sending a kind of a reporter before my time for 2 or 3 years. And the reason we started sending a reporter back in 1996-ish is because in 1994, Codex Alimentarius took a whole new rung of, you know, advanced a whole new rung of importance, because the GATT, the predecessor to the WTO, the World Trade Organization, had just been replaced in the Uruguay round of treaty negotiations by the country. And instead of being a toothless kind of almost educational organization, suddenly Codex took on a huge amount of importance, because then there was an enforcement mechanism under WTO that hadn't existed under the GATT treaties. And so this then led a lot of the pharmaceutical companies, a lot of the big agricultural companies, a lot of the others who had been kind of, you know, lazily following the meetings of Codex and trying to influence things as they usually do, to suddenly start piling on top of this. Because now, if a country were to block, say, the importation from another country who's a member of CODEX or the WTO, then that offending country could be taken to court, essentially, to a trade tribunal with the WTO. And what the WTO would do is it would, one of the first questions it asks is there a CODEX standard or a code of practice or a guideline, depends on the circumstances, that exists that governs the importation. Let me just give you a quick example.
Oh, please do. This is fascinating.
In the European Union, they, you know, there's a lot of leakage around the corners, but they generally don't allow GMO foods, genetically modified organism foods, to be imported from North America, that is Canada, and, well, really the Western Hemisphere, into the EU markets. And what WTO has done is it has sat there, and when a complaint has been filed by Canada or the United States against the EU, then they go before the WTO tribunal and they say, look, this has been declared safe by Codex Alimentarius, and the EU, for other reasons not related to safety, is not letting it in, and we want them to be penalized. And the WTO trade tribunal will hand down a judgment and decision, and if they found that a codex standard exists that says, well, this many parts per million is safe, and if the exporting country, say the United States in this case, is trying to export it to the blocking country, then they will find in favor of the United States, because this scientific body and kind of a policy body as well will have already declared that this is safe at these levels. So what that did is that suddenly turned Codex Alimentarius in the mid-90s into a huge battleground for mainly industry to try to push through its little pet regulators, especially in Australia, New Zealand, Canada, the United States, Argentina, Brazil, you name it, where they've done their influence peddling, and they basically own those regulatory agencies, to push through and at codex meetings and get a codex standard adopted. That's why when you were talking about the accomplishments, like say on the melamine, for example, Australia was the big bad guy at the codex meetings, believe it or not. They're like the point men for the empire. And, they never, ever have met a food standard, an unhealthy food standard, that they haven't loved. Not liked, but loved. Mm-hmm. And they push it tremendously. In fact, as I've said before on programs, and I'll say it again here, if you were, Johnny, just dropped in, or one of your listeners were dropped into a Codex meeting and didn't know head from tail at these meetings, all you'd have to do is listen to what position the Australian delegate takes and then take a 180-degree different position, and you'd be on the side of health and health freedom virtually 99.9% of the time. That's all you need to do. It's just a real easy thing to do.
Wow.
And it's not to say that the United States and Canada aren't the bad guys either. It's actually not to say that almost any country there isn't the bad guy at one time or another, but you can pretty much bet your last dollar that if Australia takes a position on an issue, it's a pretty bad position.
In other words, it's not a healthy position.
No, it's not. they are so far up the brown-nosing the big industries that control them, it's not even funny. And then a lot of times the United States just sits back and kind of, you know, plays the Wizard of Oz position, the man hidden behind the curtain directing Australia. It's really kind of embarrassing for Australia in a way, because they're just led around by their noses, not only by the industry, but by the United States and Canada, who I'm sure, I don't know this for certain, but give them directions and pat them on the head and probably throw them a treat every now and then, say, good job, little Aussie boy, and or girl, as the case may be, and go on from there. But what we found is, in that case that you mentioned, and sorry to tread on your words, but on that situation you mentioned in 2009, where we won at the Dusseldorf meeting, that huge victory of blocking the dumbing down of the vitamins, I spent the vitamin levels, I spent almost an hour arguing back and forth with Australia, the Australian delegation, who was behind
one. Okay, hold that thought right there. We'll be right back after these messages with Scott Tipps and the National Health Federation.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
We are back with Scott Tipps from the National Health Federation, and this is a short segment here coming in to the bottom of the hour for about 5 minutes. And Scott, we were talking about your Dusseldorf Codex meeting in 2009, where you helped, you know, they were trying to get vitamins basically so low we wouldn't have any vitamins. And so talk about the nutritional reference values that you worked on so hard against all those 250 delegates.
Yeah, well, the Australian delegate had wanted to lower the daily requirement for vitamin C from an already laughable and miserable 60 milligrams a day.
Oh, God, really?
Yeah, 60 milligrams a day down to 45 milligrams a day. And when I saw that, I just, in their paperwork, I just exploded. I mean, I couldn't believe it. And they wanted to lower magnesium per the daily requirement from 300 milligrams a day down to 240. Pretty much all the B vitamins except for folic acid were to be lowered across the board anywhere from 22% to 66%. Vitamin A was lowered significantly. Calcium, curiously enough, was to be raised.
And oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, because you know calcium and magnesium are the twin minerals. You don't want to raise calcium and lower magnesium. You actually want to go the other way around and raise magnesium.
Oh, my God, there's a – gosh, Scott, I have to stop you. Hold that thought, but I have to say this because in my work with the HTMA, right now, you know, 90% of the people in the United States, and it hadn't always been that way, but because of our diet, we're calcium dominant. That's the last thing we need is more calcium.
Exactly. It was just incredibly stupid. Well, part of the problem is, whether it's deliberate or unintentional, a lot of the nutritional science at least the nutrition committee of CODEX, it's called CCNFSDU, CODEX Committee on Nutrition and Foods for Special Dietary Uses. A lot of the knowledge there is really, they're still living in the 1970s. And it's really archaic and behind the times. They still think cholesterol is a big cause of heart attacks. And they still think that if you take too much vitamin C, it's really dangerous for you. Like they were really scared to raise the amount up by 220%, which we succeeded in doing because, oh my God, people might start getting kidney stones or, you know, flushing it out their urine. And it's really almost laughable. It's really sad.
So let me stop you right there. So do you find, you know, once they get their, it's kind of like some people, you know, they get their cushy little job and they have their little, and they may be the brown noser or whatever the case may be, but they're working in the CODEX and they're representing their country or they're representing this industry. And pretty much they just don't ever change at all. They just have their little job and they don't really care about learn anymore. They just do what they're told. Is that kind of what happens?
That's pretty much it. Also, there's a lot of groupthink mentality going on at these meetings. And what happens is the CODEX science officer, usually from the FAO, sometimes from the WHO, will hand down a decision that, I don't want to get too technical, but has been created on a certain safety issue, say whether glyphosate is safe or antibiotic use in animals is safe, or what the levels of the vitamins should be and minerals should be. And it's really a sight to behold, Johnny, at these meetings. It's almost like you're watching Moses come down from the mount with tablets of stone in hand, and he's handing these down to the delegates, and they almost genuflect on reflex. And they are very loath to, very, very loath to question or challenge the CODEX science officer's delivery of these tablets of stone that dictate what the safety issues are, what the safety considerations might be. And, you know, I have to argue at the meeting to overcome this because a lot of the science they hand down is really junk science.
Sure.
And it's been created from fake studies that have been promoted mm-hmm. by the industry, whether it's Monsanto or Merck. And they don't look any further than just, they're very nearsighted, the CODEX science people are, unfortunately, and they don't look beyond, and they actually cherry pick the science. I mean, it's all that's wrong with modern science these days. It's very corrupt. I don't care what you're talking about or looking at. You can go to look at the Lancet magazine, the editor there.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Horton even spoke about it, and Dr. Angel did as well for the New England Journal of Medicine, where she was the editor for 20 years. And they just talk about how corrupt the science is. These peer-reviewed studies that people are relying upon are oftentimes very poorly conceived, very poorly conducted, and they come out with false science. And when they do come out with the truth, what happens is the industry sponsors will just cut back. You know, the industry owns these scientific journals. It's not, they aren't devoted to truth or science, and it's not the best evidence that's out there. It's usually the worst evidence. And if you look at it, you can see why that is. The advertising in the journals is all from the pharmaceutical industry. Just use them as an example. And a big percentage, bigger than you might think, bigger than your listeners might think, of the revenue to these journals comes from reprints. So do you think Merck is going to order, 100,000 reprints from the New England Journal of Medicine on a study that proves that one of its drugs, like zilpaterol, is dangerous? No, of course not. But if there's a study there that proves how safe it is, then they'll order a tremendous number of reprints from the New England Journal of Medicine.
Wow.
And a lot of these journals get almost up to 50% of their revenue from reprints.
Oh, that's fascinating. Oh, that's fascinating. It almost like it keeps them in business.
Yes. Oh, it most definitely does. So there's a huge incentive right there for these journals. I don't care which journal it is. I picked on the New England Journal of Medicine, but there's a huge incentive for them to not rock the boat and to look the other way when science comes along. I mean, look at Andrew Wakefield with his vaccine study that showed that giving the MMR vaccine, the triple vaccine for measles, mumps, and rubella was linked to autism. Now, he didn't say that vaccines were bad. He didn't say people shouldn't give vaccines. He just merely said, look, separate them out so as to lower the risk of kids developing autism from these from the MMR vaccine. And he was pilloried because of that. I mean, he was...
Sure, he was.
He lost his license. They actually exerted, the industry exerted so much influence on the journal that the journal retracted the article that was published there. I mean, these people have tremendous amounts of influence, and this transcends just the journals. This goes to Codex Alimentarius. This goes to the Food and Drug Administration. This goes to the MHRA in England. This goes to Health Canada in Canada. This goes to the Australian people, of course, as I've mentioned before.
Oh, so they have their little ammunition in their hands when they have those reprints.
Oh, they do, and they can offer this revolving door. It's really funny, Johnny. I mean, funny, not really terribly funny. It's really sad in a way, but one of the FAO science officers, Angelica Trischer, was there for years. I knew her and argued against her at Codex meetings and went back and forth and all of that. And then I just learned, I think it was earlier this year, much earlier this year, 2019, just to date it for the future, that after leaving Codex, she got a very cushy job making $30,000 a month in the industry. So...
Wow.
There's also this revolving door that operates that's a huge incentive to corrupt regulators or people. Now, let me add very quickly, the Codex Secretariat that runs these meetings has, so far as I've seen, not been corrupted by this kind of influence. They've treated us very even-handedly. I can't say the same for some of the chairwomen and chairmen who run the meetings, but at least the Codex Secretariat located in Rome, Italy, has been very fair with us. So, you know, there's some people, there's some people who have dodged the bullet, and we're really grateful for that. And I think that's one reason we haven't been kicked out of Codex yet, although it came close about 12 years ago, where one of the FAO people leaned very hard on Codex to get NHF kicked out of Codex.
Wow.
I was able to argue our way around it. But in any event, it's really, we're looking at actual bribery of journal editors and definitely financial conflicts of interest by researchers. But if people just look at Dr. Richard Horton, you know, the former editor-in-chief of Lancet, has said, and Dr. Marcia Engel of the New England Journal of Medicine, have said, you'll get the whole picture right there.
Well, I think it's really fascinating. It's just so wonderful that you're here, because you can lay out the picture for the audience of, you know, because like I said, I'm in my little microcosm. I don't realize, you know, what's going on in Congress or what's going on, you know, in the Codex meetings, but you are there. You're right in the middle of these meetings. And I remember, you know, they're all over the place. I've seen them in Ottawa. I've seen them, you know, in Italy or Singapore or whatever. And you go and you are there and you meet with the same people every time. And it's a wonder. It's what's so amazing is that, you know, before we know it, there are certain things being passed, and it seems like 1994 and 95, 93, 94, 95, that was a real turning point, because that's when I was beginning to see about the nutrition industry in this country, mostly the MLMs and the vitamin companies, and they're, you know, all the big ones. They were all saying, wait, you know, this Codex is going to issue a proclamation, and they're going to make it so you have to have a prescription for supplements. And so they mobilized all their distributors and mobilized all their health food stores to petition their congressmen and everything to stop this Codex. So can you comment on that? Because, in the mid-90s, that was like a big time, a big pushback, because they were afraid, yes, Codex was going to make prescriptions, you know, vitamins, right, and minerals available by prescription only.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Johnny, because actually there was a lot of almost alarmist misinformation, and I'm not calling it disinformation, but misinformation.
Okay.
That's
why I got you on. I want you to tell us the truth.
That arose during that time, and you know, it was a little tough at that time to sort out fact from fiction. But number one, the thing to remember about Codex is there's not some monolithic volume of work that is just created all at once and then handed down. Just imagine it's sort of like, let's say freeway traffic. So each car represents a standard or a code of practice or a guideline. And some cars start out at 6 a.m. Other cars won't start out till 12 noon. Some cars started out somewhere in between or halfway to their destination. Others have arrived at their destination. And so that's the same way with Codex. There are all these different standards, some of which were adopted 20 years ago, some of which are still in progress, some of which haven't even been dreamt of yet. And underneath Codex Alimentarius, the commission meeting itself, which meets usually typically every July of each year, and they alternate between the FAO headquarters in Italy, in Rome, and the WHO headquarters in Geneva. And I just went to the Geneva meeting last July. Didn't make myself very popular there, but I was at that meeting, and then what happens is that you have these different standards that are in progress, but the commission itself can't handle the workload. So all these different committees, you know, more than 25 different committees,
wow,
are at work, and they're usually hosted by a particular government. For example, the nutrition committee is hosted by the German government. So one of the worst countries perhaps to host a nutrition committee, but they host that. So they choose the chairwoman. In this case, it's a chairwoman. And they choose the meeting location. Canada hosts the food labeling committee, and they select the meeting place, and they select the chairman for that meeting. And then the United States hosts a couple of committees. The French hosts the General Principles Committee. China hosts the Pesticide Residue Committee and the Food Additives Committee. So they get to pick the location of the meetings there and the chairman. You have Hungary with the Mass Analysis Committee that meets usually, almost invariably, in Budapest. You have Norway had the Fish and Fisheries Committee. Switzerland had the Mineral Waters Committee, which doesn't operate anymore. You have Australia with the Import-Export Committee and so on. You get the idea. I mean, there's so many different committees like that. The Food Hygiene Committee is one of the ones overseen by the U.S. government. And the thing to keep in mind is when we say U.S. government, Canadian government, or whatever, who send their delegates to these meetings, they send their FDA or FDA equivalent or USDA, Department of Agriculture, bureaucrats to attend these meetings. And this gets back to your earlier question, which was these people have, what's their incentive here? Well, one is it's a 9-to-5 job for most of them. A lot of them, some of them are food engineers, but a lot of them may not even rise to that level of expertise.
They're probably just bureaucrats.
Yeah, typically just bureaucrats. And keep in mind what Thomas Sowell said about bureaucracy. I mean, you know, the incentive or the main thrust of bureaucrats is procedure. It's not the outcome. And that's what I notice a lot at Codex. It's a lot of heavy emphasis on procedure. Yes, we dotted this I, we crossed this T, we followed the book concepts.
That's so they can say on the report to their superiors that we did everything we're supposed to.
Yes, and that includes accepting without question what the Codex science officer delivers into their hands at a Codex meeting. And then when the Codex delegates, which...
That's all those fake science articles.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, there's a lot of problems with the Codex science. And, you know, in fairness to the Codex science people, and I'm not saying they've been bought and paid for, although I guess I perhaps could say that, but, you know, they just look at what's been put in front of them, and if it's all fake, then they just go with that. But that just denotes laziness in my book, and really a certain sloppiness in the way of thinking. They should be critically thinking about these studies that are given to them, and they should be doing their own looking around. But the problem is that starting at the turn of the millennium, about 1999, 2000, instead of getting a wide variety of scientists on their bodies, their scientific bodies, their panels, to consider a certain issue, such as what amount of glyphosate in food is a safe amount, they started cherry picking. They decided what they wanted the outcome to be ahead of time, and then they cherry picked their scientists who support this view, this end view, and they put them on the panel, and then voila, what do you have? Of course, you have the science.
Oh, you got a unanimous vote.
Yes, so this is the problem. But for, you know, a lot of the delegates at Codex are not necessarily bought and paid for. They're, and I'm talking about the government delegates, they're just there, and they get sucked into the group think that's there, where you have the United States and Australia, who are very vocal. You have, you know, Argentina is very vocal. You have Thailand very vocal, and they all talk the mainstream position, which is whatever Monsanto wants, whatever Merck wants, and the like. Now, interestingly enough, you would think the European Union would be horrible at these meetings, but they really aren't. When it comes to contamination issues and when it comes to toxins in foods, they're actually pretty good. And quite often, NHF finds itself on the side of the EU arguing against, for example, the zilpaterol, which is a steroid-like drug that's given to animals, and ractopamine. We've been arguing against those two drugs being given to animals before slaughter because it ends up in high levels in the meat that people eat, and it affects the people, let alone the harm done to the cattle who have hooves dropping off and pigs frothing at the mouth and falling on their side. I think it's cruel to give this. And the EU has a very sensible policy. They say they do not allow, under EU law, any drug to be given to an animal that is not for therapeutic reasons. And zilpaterol is one of those drugs that is given in pretty much every Western Hemispheric country. So from Argentina and Chile all the way up to Canada.
Wow.
They give zilpaterol because if they give it to the animals, it's sort of like the Arnold Schwarzenegger drug, Johnny. It beefs them up, makes them have higher concentration of muscle and lower fat, so it's a leaner cut of meat. So you can gain a few extra bucks off doing this, but the downside is it hurts the animals, it hurts the humans who consume it, and but it's been declared safe because the studies submitted by Merck are...
Is this a Merck product?
Yes, it's a Merck drug. It's put in the animal food. It's fed to the animals. And typically what you have is a cutoff period of 2 weeks before slaughter. You know, all these drugs have to be stopped. But if you do that, and the drugs then generally still work. But with zilpaterol and ractopamine, its predecessor, and zilpaterol is just like more than 100 times potent than ractopamine.
Wow.
Then you have no effect. So they have to give it almost up to the time of slaughter, and then there are residues in the meat, and then what you find are heart palpitations and some other side effects that affect humans. It can mimic people thinking they're having heart attack and the like, and they've just eaten a heavy dose of zilpaterol. Now,
wow.
The funny thing is, this was one of NHF's great victories last year in April 2018 at the Chicago meeting of the Codex Committee on Residues of Vet Drugs in Food. That's a mouthful right there to say that committee, which we've been attending off and on. And Merck was so convinced that they were going to win. And, you know, they have their own little front group there at these Codex meetings.
Mm-hmm.
At this particular one called Health for Animals. Really, if they had honesty in labeling, they would call it Drugs for Animals because they never met a drug that they didn't like. And in this case,
sounds so pushy and nice.
Their name, Health for Animals, is an extreme joke because it's all about drugs for animals. So they've been pushing it. They spent millions of dollars to get a standard for zilpaterol. Zilpaterol is the way it's spelled. You can find it on our website, thenhf.com. Just plug it into the search engine, you'll come up with the report that I wrote last year after the meeting, and you can see the whole sorry story. But the sorry story had a happy ending, and that is that the EU and a few other countries were opposed to zilpaterol, a standard being put in for zilpaterol, but most of them conceded that there was no safety issue, and it was only NHF that said, look, we have a huge safety issue here, and this cannot be allowed in the product. And
wow, so Italy may not have even known about it, or EU may not have even known about it if you hadn't brought it up.
Well, it's not so much that, Johnny. The EU has something called EFSA, the European Food Safety Agency, that passes kind of like the Institutes of Medicine might, or the FDA might, or some of the FDA panels might, on certain drugs, and EFSA found it to be safe. But unfortunately, EFSA has sort of a spotty reputation amongst us and health freedom people because sometimes it can be quite good and other times it's just pure dreck. But in this case, it's pure dreck because the science really doesn't support the EFSA position or the JECFA position, the Joint FAO-WHO Expert Consultation on Food Additives. That's what JECFA stands for. Anyway, So we argued, we said, look, the science is against it. It's not safe. The EU argued on policy reasons, what I was telling you before, that is that, you know, it's against EU policy because it's not a therapeutic drug. This is a just something to make more money on. I mean, the only therapy in this drug is that it enhances the bottom line of sick financial statements. That's the only therapeutic use.
It enhances the muscle mass and the mass of the profit.
Yes, exactly. That's it. And so we argued, and this went on for quite some time. Fortunately, we had a very fair chairman, Kevin Greenlee's, who treated everyone equally. You know, sometimes you have a chairperson who will ignore NHF's request to speak, but this one didn't. He was fair to all sides. But we won. We got it stopped. Now, keep in mind that when you introduce a standard, as Merck did, as health for animals, drugs for animals did previously. Well, they actually didn't introduce it. They got a country to introduce it, but they supported it, backed it, and put money behind it. They spent millions on it. And they were.
Okay, hold that thought. We'll be right back after these messages.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org, and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
All right, we are back. Scott Tipps, the National Health Federation. And, you know, if you want to visit that website while we're talking, it's the NHF, that's National Health Federation, thenhf.com. Okay? So, Scott, we were just talking about this Zerpaterol and how you got that from being so much of it being put into meat. Please expand more on that. That was fascinating.
Well, the funny thing is, thank you, Johnny. I was just talking about this meeting back in Chicago in April of last year. And we were at the point at the meeting where the EU, a handful of other countries, and the NHF, with the NHF taking the laboring oar of arguing against it on two grounds. That is, not only that it was unsafe, but there were also policy reasons not to do this. And when the decision was handed down by the chair, because, you know, they make decisions, they make decisions based not on voting, typically. I mean, during the 20 years I've been going to these Codex meetings, I've only seen them vote three times.
Wow.
And those are really special occasions. Otherwise, it's done by consensus. That is, the chairman or the chairwoman will look around the room and see how much support there's been or not been for a particular standard to be advanced, and then make a decision based on that, which can be very biased at times.
But fortunately,
at this meeting, this chairman and the chairman who preceded him were very fair men, and they really conducted the meeting quite honestly. In any event, the decision was made that, and I had to argue on the consensus, because at this meeting, the science officer was saying, hey, look, we have scientific consensus because the EU is not arguing against us on scientific grounds that it's unsafe. They're only arguing on policy grounds. So he tried to create this new term out of the Codex procedural manual that didn't even exist in there. So I had to point that out and say, this is wrong. It doesn't matter whether you have scientific consensus or not. We're also a policymaking body, and you can't have that. So I said, look, which most of the delegates there don't know. They don't know the definition of consensus, which is the absence of sustained opposition. I said, you have sustained opposition here, so you cannot find consensus. It cannot advance up the eight-step ladder, the eight-step process to final approval. We're only here at step three or four, and it cannot advance up. Well, the chairman agreed with me, and it stopped right there. And the guy who was head of drugs for animals was livid, and we broke for lunch. He went up to the front of the room as we were putting aside our papers, and he saw, he was showing something on his iPhone. The Greek delegate came over and thanked us for our position and all that. But I'm noticing over this Greek guy's shoulder that this creepy guy is up at the front table showing up something on his iPhone to the Codex science officer. I didn't think much about it, but we broke for lunch, went to lunch, came back. I had to take a phone call before coming into the room, but as I'm talking on the phone, I'm hearing all this applause coming from the room, and I go in only to find on the tail end of the words spoken by the Codex science officer who's saying, this, you know, Codex science is not junk science, it's real science, and NHF is wrong to have called us junk science on their Facebook page. I've never seen the head table berate any delegate
because you stopped their little drug they decided to pull out on you and NHF.
And then it turns out I went over and to the Codex Secretariat, the head guy there, and during a break, and I said, God, can you believe that what they did? And he said, oh, he came over to me and showed a picture of me with you, Scott, and said, "Oh, this not look good for you." And and then he came over and chortled in our ears, the same creep from drugs for animals, came over and chortled in our ears and said, "Oh, everyone in this room now hates you."
Oh my God, yeah. Oh, yeah. I see what they really got their little police, don't they?
Oh, they do.